Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining NASPA. Today is November 11th, and this is scan number 2789. Tonight we have a very interesting guest that's going to be coming on with us, and her name is, we call her Barbara Joy, and she, Bobby Joy actually is her nickname, but it's Barbara Joy Hansen, and she's from Milford, Massachusetts. And she has so many good things, and she is one of the NASCA family members here. And she does a lot of different types of, I guess would be, you know, resulting in healing with PTSD and things of that nature that she deals with a lot, trauma-informed perspectives and things of that nature. So before I get into that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about NASCA. And NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And we are a nonprofit, 501c3. And, you know, we basically, you know, like to enhance a lot of our areas, you know, based on child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. You know, there's a lot there. Look at that alone. And really at NASCA, we have a single purpose here, and it's to address issues, you know, related to child abuse and trauma, including sex assault and violent and physical abuse. Just, you know, any end of it, we will. And, you know, emotional traumas and neglect. You know, and we try to, I guess, you know, reach these things through, you know, with two goals. And the first goal is educating the public, okay? And this is what NASCA does so well, is that we have a huge platform that is available to everyone through NASCA. And if you would go into, you know, the NASCA website, it would be NASCA.org, and you can go down to all the red and just click on each program. I mean, we have all kind of areas about recovery and about protecting our kids and actually participating with NASCA, okay? And if you'd like to, you can always, you know, feel free to join in, okay? And I want to give you the call-in number for tonight, okay? As a guest call-in, your number is going to be 646-595-2118. Okay, 646-595-2118. And listen, you can remain anonymous, but we'd like to hear from anyone. And if you want to, you know, ask a question or leave a comment, okay? And thank you for listening, too, by the way. So, you know, getting back to NASCA, you know, with educating the public, I mean, you know, this really affects everyone, okay? Everyone. I mean, it's a national pandemic. You know, we're just trying to, you know, to educate the public, especially, you know, in relating to, you know, helping society get over its taboo, you know, of discussing it, okay? Because, you know, that was never really talked about back in the day, so to speak, you know. But now that's what I think NASCA does really well is helping, you know, that area come through. And, you know, the second is offering hope and healing, okay? You know, there's numerous paths, And this is what we do here at NASCO, is that we offer that for you, okay? Is that we have, like I said earlier, we have such a huge platform available for everyone. And you know, we're going to be here for you. So, you know, the thing with that, too, is that, you know, when you are a survivor of child abuse, okay, and I think anyone that's in the panel tonight and anyone that has been a victim or survivor, you know, is that information is never enough, you know, when it comes down, you know, to educating, and including ourselves, you know. So, you know, with that, it, you know, it's always going to be involving, you know, the prevention and the intervention and recovery of it all, okay? And that's what it's all about, you know. And hey, you know, we even offer this in Spanish, too. So, you know, it's just the fact that we're going to be here for you. And tonight, like I said, we do have a special guest that's going to be a call-in for us. Before that, though, I do want to introduce you to my co-host here tonight. It's Tammy Richardson. Hi, Tammy. How are you?
Hi, it's Tammy Shostal. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida. Yeah,
okay.
It's Tammy Shostal. That's okay.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
I have
anyway.
A relative named Richardson. That is a family name.
Okay,
but I am calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'm proud to be here. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Most of my abuse was physical, emotional, verbal. Was most of it. I did have about with the some childhood sexual abuse, but I was not not that I'm any stronger than anybody else. But this individual was not able to groom me, so because he wasn't able to groom me, I was always made to be a liar in case I ever told what he did. No one would believe me. But I also had my main abuser was my grandmother, who physically, mentally, emotionally tortured me. So that's my story.
Oh, wow.
So I'm glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to the show. Go ahead.
Okay. And tonight, Barbara Joy Hansen is with us. How you doing, Barbara? Hi, Barbara. Are you there? There you go.
Hi.
Well, she might be muted,
there
and we've
go.
Got Brian with us as well.
She is. Yeah.
Am I
Hi,
muted?
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Am I on?
No, I have you.
Okay,
yes, you
hi.
Are.
Good to be back on.
How are you?
Thank you.
Good, good. So you actually go by Bobby Joy?
Yeah, my mommy and dad called me that, and I love the name Bobby Joy. But when you order my book, you can't order it through Bobby Joy. You order it through Barbara Joy Hansen, and you can get it from me.
Okay.
Listen to the cry of the child. So I'm delighted
so
to be back
the name
on.
Of it?
Listen to the cry of the child, the deafening silence of sexual abuse. And basically, my brief story isn't just sexual abuse. Usually when you're abused by one, you're abused by many, and the perpetrator always abuses many, many people before they get to you sometimes. My mother and my cousins were sexually traumatized and sodomized by my grandfather as well as me, and the clergy sex abuse at a camp. A youth pastor, and violence, verbal abuse, and sexual crimes in my marriage as well, with pornography and my husband cheating on me. But we're still together, and I just want to say that religious leaders are not equipped to help us. Only 8% are equipped to help us. And we need to be our brothers and sisters' keeper. We need to help each other. We need to talk about it, and the show is a venue to do that.
Great. That is great. And we want to thank you for being here tonight, too. You know, I know that a lot of things happened to you, you know, at a very early age in your life. I mean, you know, it must have been pretty devastating to go through all of that, you know, especially, you know, by your grandfather and stuff. And this has a lot to do, you know, with a lot of the things that people, you know, do wind up writing about later on and the way that their lives went and everything else, you know. So, you know, if there was a way that you could describe maybe, you know, like those first years that you can possibly remember? Would it be 5, 4? I've heard as young as 3, believe it or not, you know, and 4 years old, people actually remembering things
right.
that way.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
what was
my abuse started at about 2 or 3 until 8. And
mm-hmm.
I was so traumatized. And at that age, you have no words to tell, and
right.
you're told not to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So you obey
mm-hmm.
the perpetrator who was supposed to protect me, and he didn't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the things that he did to me, and himself
mm-hmm.
while I was alone with him, sodomized
right. mm-hmm.
and those, you know, other things.
Mm-hmm.
It was so it
mm-hmm.
it just literally shut me down. And
right.
until
yeah.
8, and then at age 8 I
mm-hmm.
never went near him again, and I was afraid my mother would ask me to hug him goodbye, and she didn't. She was
really?
Abused by him, and I found out when she was 83 years old when I wrote my book and I was going to face the clergy
uh-huh.
in a sex abuse case
uh-huh.
that was put together by my childhood denomination for me to face the perpetrator, which was the best thing in the world that I ever did, was to face my abuser, one of my abusers.
Right.
You know, I can totally agree with that. You know, and also too, you know, we had Brian with us too from Boston.
Right.
Brian, how you doing tonight?
Oh, good. Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be joining
good.
This conversation tonight.
Yeah, awesome.
Well,
I want to welcome you in. Yes, we have
absolutely.
A lot to talk about tonight. We really do. You know, from what Barbara, well, what would you like to be called? You know, Bobby Joy?
Yes, you can call me Bobby Joy.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, that I love that name, actually. It really is a nice name. That, you know, we have so much that's on you know this topic tonight that we're, you know, of course the time is limited, you know. So, you know, we want to try to cover as much as we possibly can, because, you know, Bobby Joy, you have a lot here that you deal with, and so we have
right.
to try to, you know, touch on each area. And let everybody, you know, have their input on that area, and let's just move on to other things, because it's going to lead to other things anyway. You know it is.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So let's just,
well,
yeah. So what
let
I'm
me,
really
let me
interested
stop you.
At
let
this
me,
point. Sure.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Go
let
ahead.
Me stop you right there, if you don't mind, John.
Sure.
I want to get this out there for anyone who may be streaming in, if you don't mind. Because we know a lot of people stream in. I wanted to provide the
right.
number if you wanted to call in and participate in the show. It's 646-595-2118. And tonight's show is an open mic show, question and answer type show. We will leave all the mics open. And again, like John said at the beginning of the show, if you want to participate, that's fine. But if not, that's fine as well. And Barbara Joy, I know that you usually start us off with a topic that you may be a theme. So I just wanted to get that out there, if you didn't mind, and I want to turn the mic back over to John. And please excuse
mm-hmm.
me interrupting you. I just
no
want
problem.
To make sure
yeah,
the people
no
who
problem.
You know streaming
absolutely.
In, because we may have three
mm-hmm.
or four people on the panel, but we could have as much as 300 or 400
absolutely.
Listening.
Well, you know
so
what?
I just wanted
there's
to provide that
more,
number.
More ways. Yeah, there's actually more ways to get in touch with the show besides that. And when we get back to that, I'll throw that in too, so everybody can do it. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
You're so welcome.
So Bobby Joy, you know, we were going to talk about a lot of different things tonight. But so far, you know, we talked about a little bit about some things that went on, and you gave us a brief, you know, description on some things that happened to you, you know, when you were a younger, you know, and I know that Tammy has weighed in a little bit on it. Maybe she wants to say something else about that before I bring Brian on.
Yeah, I would like to just say that I'm delighted to have Brian call in tonight.
Yes.
Basically met him on Twitter today. He popped up,
oh, yeah?
and
mm-hmm.
And I would like to hear from him before I start the show a little bit. So, Brian,
mm-hmm.
if you would just tell us, actually, the panel, just briefly your story.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. I meet people on Twitter sometimes. I've been connected to Emma Jane Taylor, who is in the UK, and I've been working with her. She has a talk show in the UK about it's called The Silence, about child sexual abuse. So my story, I'm 43, and I live in Boston, Massachusetts. And so, Bobby Joe, I'm close to you. I'm not too far away, actually, which
That's
is
right.
funny.
yeah.
And I went to Catholic school for 12 years of my childhood. And between the ages of 10 and 12, I was abused by my altar boy coordinator. I never came forward until about 2016. So about 27 years later, I came forward. And there's all that shame and guilt and embarrassment and even a huge effect on my masculinity coming forward. I really never envisioned I would come forward, but it happened from seeing other survivors come forward and giving me the courage to come forward myself. And I know a lot of...
So that's what it took for you, Brian? That's what it took for you?
You know, my life was really going down a path of drug abuse, and because I had, you know, held it in and pushed it, we joke in the Catholic religion, you push it down and you keep it down. You don't talk about it. And I think I pushed it down so far. You know, it had effect on me in my 20s and, you know, growing. It just had such emotional, mental PTSD effects on me growing up at my adult age that I was suicidal. I was abusing drugs. And finally it came to a point where I needed to speak. And I finally did. And I never imagined I would, but it has saved my life. And so I'm happy to talk about my experience. And I have numerous survivor friends that have committed suicide because they were not able to come forward, or because of the trauma or the pain or the shame or embarrassment they felt, you know. And so because of those few people that I know or others, I will speak out because I would never want it to happen to anyone else.
Amen. Ron, thank you so much for coming on.
Can I just tell you I love you for that? I really do love you for that, because this is what it's going to take, man. You know, and let me tell you something. You and I, mirror image, man. Same thing with me, okay? Mom was in, back in 1976, okay? So it's been a while, of course, but, you know, every time I hear you say something, it's identical, you know? So, yeah, I'm very interested, and I just really can't thank you enough for finally coming out, man, you know? And I hope people are listening to that, because listen, let me ask you one question, and it's either you can reply as much as you want. How has your life changed since then?
Oh goodness! So I've been through a lot of therapy. I have to say, therapy. I never thought I would go to therapy. I really never thought. I started therapy when I was in my late 30s, and it was a lifesaver. So that was a. I have to say that was a huge help. That was a huge help, but. Coming forward, the pain lifted off of me, you know, and that shame, that embarrassment. And I think, you know, John, you might understand this too. I find I never saw a lot of males coming forward. And I think a lot of it has to do with masculinity and feeling ashamed. And I saw the movie. There was a movie that came out a few years ago called Spotlight. That was about it won, like, Best Picture. It was actually about Boston, about the Catholic abuse scandal. And there was a character in that who was a true life person, Joe Crowley. Joe Crowley was like one of the first men to come out and speak about it. And I was obsessed with Joe Crowley. And I said, you know what? He came out, he spoke about it. And I saw how it changed his life. And I think, you know, it saved my life. It absolutely did. So if I could help people do that, I would,
Right.
It takes real courage for a man to come forward. I'm proud of you. I'm so delighted that you connected with me on Twitter. One question I have, I did see your show with the priest that abused you. Did you have an opportunity to face him and confront him?
So this is what's insane. You know, I hear a lot of stories, and I think I might have even heard it come up, like you think you're the only one. And when I when I came forward 27 years later in my late 30s in 2016, that clip I sent you, Bobby Joe, was because it got a lot of press coverage. And when I got to the courtroom, the DA, the district attorney's office came, oh, there's a lot of stuff about this guy. And so it got a lot of court coverage. And then what happened was I was able to press charges against him. And at first he pled not guilty. And because of like all the evidence that came in against him, and there was other things in the past that was a shock to me. I thought I was the only one, but I went back for him to like the 1960s.
Sure.
He actually changed his plea and he pled guilty, and I was able to prosecute him and put him behind bars, which was really
good.
Which was really amazing. It was like it was insane. It was just absolutely to give him an impact statement and say what he did to me. Yeah, it was crazy.
That changed your life,
you know,
Ron,
that's
just
one
like
of the
facing.
Things, man.
Yeah, that absolutely changed your life and brought you some closure, like facing one of my abusers did. And it was something like you probably. I never thought I'd do. I never dreamed I would face my perpetrator, the one that sodomized me and molested me at a camp.
Mm.
But, you know, and I am not his judge or his jury. He didn't go behind bars. As soon as I said, I forgive you, when he asked me, even though he was in complete denial, if I could forgive him, I said, you need to run into recovery for all those kids you harmed from campground to campground. 7 weeks later, I got a call from the head of the committee from a sex abuse case telling me that he fell down the stairs and broke his back and died. So I didn't have to do a thing.
Sometimes karma happens to people. You know,
what a miracle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was sad that happened to him, because he only had a 7 week window to get right with God and with others. And, you know, with me, I did give him my forgiveness, so I feel like I did my part. But to have him die 7 weeks later after I forgave him, I could never have written my book. I could never have moved forward. So that was a huge, and for you as well, Brian.
No, absolutely. It's a huge weight that's lifted off of you. I know.
Right.
Even I was actually on a talk show last week with Emma Jane Taylor, who's amazing. She's a great friend. She's also a survivor of abuse. And every time I hear someone else's story, it makes me just feel better that I'm not the only one.
Right.
And, you know, and I remember as even a teenager or a child, I can't imagine having these conversations or hearing them on the radio or on the internet.
No, we didn't.
I'm so grateful that you guys are doing this, because if this was around when I was 13 or 14, I would have called in. And maybe, you know, my mother and my family, when I told them as an adult that I was abused, oh, my mother was just like, why didn't you tell me? I can't believe you didn't tell
me. My mother did, too. Yep.
Yeah.
Same thing.
And I said I just didn't think anyone would believe me. And that was really hard to go through, and she took it very hard at the beginning, too. And I couldn't imagine as a teenager now living in 2021, if you were abused, hearing this conversation and being like, oh, my goodness, they're talking about this. Call in. That's why my Twitter's always open for anyone if they want to talk to me. And I do get a lot of messages from people, so I encourage you, reach out to me. I can help you any way I can, or give you the resources and point you in the right way. Because
you want to leave us with that Twitter account number or what?
Oh, sure. It's just at Brian Moore Ward. So all my full name, at Brian Moore Ward, BrianMooreward. And again, I also am a survivor leader in Boston for the district attorney's office in Suffolk County.
Awesome,
and we
awesome
help and
to
talk
you.
To, you know, children about, you know, a lot of it is a lot of people talk to you about the strangers, and Emma Jane Thompson in the UK talks about that. But a lot of the times it's those people that you know and that you trust. So it's more about realizing what's appropriate touch and what's appropriate behavior with adults. And I think, you know, as a child, we were always like, oh, stranger danger. You don't want to go with strangers. But it's sometimes you have to focus that on the people you know the most and that you trust the most because you don't know what their intentions are.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a really, really important discussion as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they're rarely strangers.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes, yes. And you know, talking about that, too, I mean, you really brought up some very, very touching situations there, Brian, about different situations that you and I and everyone that's listening, I think, really knows about, and it's that trust issue, okay, and which you know that that is such a touchy area when it comes down to this, you know, kind of subject. So, you know, how was your experience going through that with your therapist as far as the trust went and knowing that you were going to have to tell your story over, you know, and that kind of thing? Because I know you said you went to therapy and stuff, and, you know, I think we all have. And so how was that experience for you, and what would you recommend?
So the first therapist I went to, I never – so I'm 43 – I came out like 5 years ago about my abuse. I went to a therapist that was recommended by someone that I knew, just they knew someone that used them. And she was wonderful. She was great. There wasn't a great connection between us, though. So I think sometimes
you find
the right the right person that works for you.
Right.
And I took some time, and then I found my therapist now I've been working with for almost 2 years about. And he's just—he's amazing. He's amazing. He challenges me. I think you just have to find the right fit, and I think sometimes you might go through a few therapists before you find the right one. And it's nothing to do with the therapist. But I think you just have to find that right connection. My first therapist definitely helped me release some of that shame and that embarrassment. And then the next therapist I work with—I've been with him for a few years now. He's just. He's almost like a friend. I can tell him everything I'm dealing with. There's triggers that come up. I can talk to him. And he can actually, he helps me, you know, go through those things. But I think it's a personal connection. You just have to find the right person for you for sure. And it might take,
and I'll tell you,
and I've talked, it might take a few people before you find the right
person. That's the thing I was getting at. And I know for sure that I want to hear, you know, Bobby Joy's input on that too. But before I get to that real quick, I just want to say that you had opportunity to witness a prosecution, okay? And I do this all the time. I'll actually go in for different people, and I support the families. And I just got to see another case where all four of the victims got to see, you know, justice done for a change, you know? And like myself, just like you, mine died. You know, after 45 years, finally had him prosecuted, and he dies before he serves any time in jail. So, you know, what is that? You know, so excuse the background noise. But I'm just saying that you, that's rare, very, very rare. And I know that it has a huge impact on your, you know, your road to healing and you know, coming out of all of those hard times that you fought for and decided, hey, you know, I did the right thing and had some closure at the end, you know? So what do you think about that? You know, Baba Joel?
Well, I think it's very rare that someone can actually face the perpetrator because of the statute of limitations, many, many years have gone by, and mine was 38 years. So, I mean, I didn't have a clue that he was still living. And like I said, I never had any thoughts to face him. But going back to the campground, I saw a best friend that had gone through it. So both of us and two other women were flown to Florida, and a sex abuse case was set up with a committee of discipline for him, and he was brought in, and committee of restoration for us. And they had a well-known psychiatrist there in the room for us if we needed that. And the profound question that I asked him was, who hurt you so bad that you had to hurt me? And the psychiatrist couldn't believe that kind of a question. It wasn't anything I had thought about before, but I just wanted to know and he didn't come up with an answer other than, I was raised in a godly home like you were, and I don't recall being molested. And then he went on to ask me if I could find it in my heart to forgive him. So I mean, I was terrified to walk in that room and face him and see somebody I hadn't seen for that long. And went through panic attacks, went through like a $300 phone bill to call people to ask them to pray and think about me as I was walking in the room. And and they paid it and treated me like a VIP. But it was very, very difficult. But when he passed, of course, I was just as shocked as everybody else 7 weeks later, which I came back home and I knew I had to document in my book, and I wrote every single detail, not only about that, but about my life story and the things that I had been traumatized in my life, in my marriage, and things that my husband and I have gone through as well. Because it doesn't just affect you. Sexual abuse affects everybody in your family. And from my experience and in my reading on the subject, I've come to realize no family has been untouched by sexual abuse. You either know somebody who's been molested or somebody in your family has been affected by it. And if you don't think so, you just don't know about it.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and bringing that up too, well, how about you, Tana? Would you like to put in on that?
Yeah, yes, I would. I'm just listening to you guys talk. A couple of things
that
come to mind. Barbara Joy made a comment that is super true at the beginning, that a lot of times perpetrators do have multiple victims, and it's not unusual for victims to have, you know, multiple perpetrators who prey upon them.
Right.
And it's really easy for them to think, I'm doing something wrong because I'm the common denominator. But that's not true at all.
Yeah.
And anyone who was listening, I would never want anybody to think that, because they can see the signs. They can pick up on it. They can almost smell it. You know? And so
yeah,
I want anyone who is listening to know that you're not alone, and it is normal, and there is nothing any of us could have possibly done to deserve what was bestowed upon us. Okay?
That's right.
And I also wanted to make a comment on what Brian had said. You know, a lot of times you do have to find the right therapist. I've been on this show many, many, many times and heard people say, well, I'm not getting any help. You know, I've been with my therapist for 10 years. Well, you've probably been with him, you know, 9 and a half too long. You need to find someone that you can connect with, but a lot of times, you know, that is trauma trained. Every therapist is trauma trained. And, you know, we have people on this show.
Exactly. The only time that you're going to hear this from is from people that are true survivors, okay, that have been through
I believe that, too.
And that was
the best
advice that I have ever heard, and that's the best advice that I will keep giving, is exactly what you just said.
But will your therapist actually tell you that they have been molested? Because I believe you have to go to somebody that understands what you've gone through. It's like going to a carpenter to build a house. You've got to find the right carpenter.
Right, and I think you're right that there, even if they – because I know a gentleman, his name is Dan. He's retired now, but he ran the Child Advocacy Center in my hometown, Augusta, Georgia. He was a normie, but he was also exposed to it in helping people in the hospital and, you know, dealing directly, helping, you know, children being removed to the home, from the home, who had been beaten and battered and abused, even though he wasn't himself. He was very, very knowledgeable and he was 100% an advocate. So they have to have some kind of experience, even if it's not their own, you know, but to help people. You know, I also want anyone who is listening to know that, you know, there are a lot of venues. I know John started the show by talking about some of the venues we have. A therapist may help some people if they find the right therapist, but a group like us, I've never been to a therapist, ever. And I was able to get on my healing process. So, different things for different people. You know, the church helps some people, and then some people, the church is where they were hurt. And then
right.
I've also experienced
mm-hmm.
people who, you know, came from the church. You know, they came from the church. They were hurt in the church, but they still,
mm-hmm.
you know, they still have a love for the church. And that is something that, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
a personal journey for each and every one of us. There is no right answer. There is no wrong answer.
Okay. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
right,
that's
you
what
I
wanted to
ask.
Go ahead, Brian.
I'm sorry. I think you make a really great point. A therapist might not work for everyone. So your way of dealing with it might be with talking to a friend or someone that you, you know, a community leader or a community group that you deal with or a support group. So it might not always be a therapist. And I think that's very important what you said. Not, what works for one person doesn't always work for everyone as well, too. What they're comfortable
and how
with
I helped myself
exactly.
was not going to a therapist, although I have
mm-hmm.
talked to two of them, and I went to my husband's college reunion in Texas and spoke in a university, and I went through trauma class with a therapist as the students watched him lead
mm-hmm.
me through it. And it was very interesting, and I really enjoyed, I mean, I feel that if he were near here, I would probably go to him. But I teach a trauma group called Beyond the Darkness, Beauty Out of Ashes
yes.
Is the name of it.
Yes.
And it's a faith-based group.
That.
And it goes into chapter by chapter by chapter of all kinds of abuse, including ritualistic abuse, which is witchcraft and torture and satanic abuse.
Uh-huh.
And that is something that you almost need a therapist for. So, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
like we've said, not one all fits all. And it has many, many stories in the book. You actually write your story at the end of each chapter that you read. And it was a wonderful healing journey
mm-hmm.
for me, and I've helped lead the sexual abuse group for about 9 seasons. And
uh-huh.
you can get the material from me if anybody listening
right.
Wants my book or wants the Beauty Out of Ashes. You can
right.
call me at 508-473-1280 or email me at Bobby Joy Hansen, Hansen, at juno.com.
Mm-hmm.
And my
okay.
website is listentothecry.org. I've got
uh-huh.
many,
and,
many shows. I had a show this last week that
uh-huh.
I sent to Brian today, and maybe he hasn't had a chance to see it. It's a half-an-hour show. In an
right.
Upton, Massachusetts cable television show, and it was my second interview, and I was
right.
signing my
uh-huh.
books outside Walmart one day, and the producer walked by me, and she saw me, and she said, "Oh, Barbara, you're still doing your work," and I said, "Oh, yes, it's even gotten bigger, and I've had so many Skypes and Zooms and shows in the last couple years, not even leaving my house." So she said, "I want you to
uh-huh.
back on," so she had me on, and I was on last week, and it was a great show. So if you want
right.
to see that, you can connect to me on
uh-huh.
Facebook or on my
so you've
website.
Done some pretty extensive interviews, haven't you?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Many, many shows. Dr. Oz show I was on with 20 survivors of sexual assault and harassment.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Which was phenomenal because he's a really sweet, gentle medical doctor, and he didn't
right.
seem to know too much about sexual assault or sexual abuse. And so we had
right.
Dr. Robin Smith, who's Oprah's therapist, come on to lead
yeah.
a discussion with us, and it was very revealing, very heartrending. There were many tears. Some of the women, you know, told their stories. And but I've had shows in New York City. I won the poster presentation at IVAT, International Abuse and Trauma Conference in California, out of
uh-huh.
1,500 people.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and it's well. That was another subject I was going to lead into. So I guess I might as well
yeah.
ask this question.
Sure.
In my
absolutely.
Support group, I pass out a mask, a blank mask with eye holes, and on the top of it, I say, "Victim, who are you? What's really going on? Be honest." So I want to ask you, each person on the panel, right today, now. How do you see yourself? Be honest with your perception of yourself. Don't hide anymore, because the more you hide, the
mm-hmm.
more you escape. and are in denial. So if you had your mask and it said victim on it, who are you? How do you see yourself? And I'd like to know what your answer would be. I guess I could start. When I was a victim, I said, and I'm no longer a victim, but I said, I'm a perfectionist. I'm codependent. I look to others to lift up myself rather than to God. I have very low self-esteem. I'm a risk taker, but I'm also a caretaker. I am honest, tidy, neat, sometimes over-compulsive, which sometimes when we're victims, I over-cleaned. I avoided people when they came to my door. I isolated. I hid. I had very few close friends. I have deep empathy. I weep with those that weep. So no one understands me. The church avoided me. So that's some of the things I wrote on my mask. So what do you, how would you answer that?
Well, do you want me to go next?
How about you, Brian?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Okay, this is Tammy. Hold on, let me shut the door. Well, if I had a mask, you know, my mask has changed through the years. You know, the mask that I wear now would not be the mask that I wore years ago. Like you said, Barbara, I'm not a victim anymore. I'm a survivor and a warrior and an advocate.
Yeah.
You know, early on, you know, my mask would have been outgoing. It would have been low self-esteem. Now, how can you be outgoing and low self-esteem? I was both because by nature, I'm an outgoing person, but when you have low self-esteem, a lot of times it doesn't come off very well. You get loud. You're written off as obnoxious, you know, not saying the right thing and doing bonehead things. Low self-esteem, I would be a repeater because no one ever listened to me when I was young, so that is one of the things I've had to overcome. I still do it sometimes. I'll say the same thing two or three times. I had a boyfriend one time. You keep repeating yourself. Well, you're not listening to me. And I was so used to people not listening to me, I was a habitual a repeater.
You wanted to be heard.
Talking. I wanted to be heard. You know, I didn't love myself. As I should have, and so that's the mask I wore. The mask I wear now is my self-esteem is on the rise, so I have you know not low self-esteem anymore. I won't say high self-esteem, but you know it's not at the bottom of the barrel anymore. So I have self-esteem. I've learned I have self-love. I have you know the I'm an advocate. I'm a controller by trade, a director of human resources and finance, and I am a controller. You know, I'm not a control freak, but I do, you know, I am in charge. I've had to learn that. So my mask have changed through the years. They really, really have. You know, I do finance and I'm a controller and HR, which are completely spectrum opposites, and I wear both hats professionally. So I've had to learn that. Yeah, I also am someone who a body language studier. You know, I'm working on my doctorate, and that's going to be my dissertation. Mm-hmm. So I'm an observer of body language. That's who I am.
That's great.
Thank you.
Wow, Tammy, you and I are very similar. in certain ways, we have parallel masks. If I think about the mask I would have had. Bobby Joe, when you say as a victim, a lot of it is parallel to what Tammy said. I was ashamed. I was insecure. I actually, I was outgoing at that time. And then my mask has changed through the years as I came forward and as I became a survivor and a warrior, as Tammy said. My mask is confident and I'm happy. That shame and that embarrassment and that guilt has been all lifted off of me and been sent to my abuser who deserves it. Shame and then the embarrassment and the guilt is not mine to carry anymore. It took me years to get there, but I think Tammy hit it on the head with a lot of things that she said. Your masks change as you grow and as you evolve. But I'm very happy. A lot of stress has been lifted off of my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And like I've said numerous times during this conversation, I never thought I would ever speak about this. And mm-hmm. even speaking about this publicly is just another notch to be confident in myself and happy about the choices I've made. And coming mm-hmm. forward, it was the right decision. And I hate that there's silence behind these conversations, because I think it helps more and more survivors to hear other people talk about it. And
right.
I think my mask is to be advocacy and to help others any way they can. And one thing I will tell you, one of the main reasons I came forward was I have 12 nieces and nephews, and I found out my abuser was living a mile down the road from my nieces and nephews.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
When I found that out, that really was the tipping point for me, because I couldn't imagine my nephews or my niece riding by his house
mm-hmm.
and seeing him or having any, you know, interaction with him. So part of that was what made me jump forward and come forward as well, too. So I think to protect others is part of my mask as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you. You've come far.
Day by day, right? Day by day.
Yes. That's right. And I'm not the same person that I said I was either. I think that you are controlling because your life has been out of control. But it took me a long time to understand that. Now I see myself as more of a listener, and I'm stronger. I'm a strict self-starter. Merciful, I'm whole, I'm fulfilled, I'm fruitful. The fruit is coming in because of these shows coming out, and you know, my books are going worldwide, and I went all the way to the Philippines and had a movie made of my life while I was there. So it's just been incredible, the doors that are opening as you speak, as you step out, as you risk. So I think we're all risk takers. And if you don't risk, you won't get anywhere.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, John, did you already say how you feel?
John?
Is he still there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you now.
Did you already talk about your mask?
No, I was just getting ready to explain to you that I have one mask on, and this particular mask is mirrored, okay? And what that mask does is that it's the last thing a pedophile is going to see before he goes to jail for the rest of his life. That's what my mask is.
Mm.
And that's all I have to say about that.
That's very powerful. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being from New Orleans, you know, and I'm going to be holding my guitar, playing a song as I do it, you know, because I want to be who I am. And I want them to know, you know, look who you are. Look who you are. You're a monster. You deserve to be put in your place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
Go ahead. Before I leave off this subject, is that, you know, we had talked a little bit about, you know, some limitations and stuff, okay? I do want to tell you all, and I'm not, you know, if you're aware of this or not, and also about being with a particular group, okay? If any of y'all don't know this, you know, I have my own organization. It's SCSA, okay? I'm the vice president. I'm over men's division. We have weekly meetings, okay, every week. I can't tell you enough, and the same things you're talking about earlier is how people, you know, save lives by doing, you know, what you all are talking about and what we do. So I just wanted to throw that in, is that, you know, these to me is that when you get with people that, or like yourself, okay, but then you have people that have been, you know, extensively trained over years and are just like yourself, a lot comes together in the end, you know, and it really is a beautiful thing. And I wanted to thank y'all for bringing that up because it is a very, very important thing. But I do want to let y'all know, and I'll move on, is that we actually got the statute of limitations abolished in Louisiana, okay, and forever. I just want to let y'all know we just got that done. That's my group and the attorneys that I work with, and it's such a beautiful thing. And plus we got a three-year window on top of criminal with that included, you know. So it does play a huge part in, you know, when people come into closure and, you know, getting that, you know, road of you know, being victimized and growing out of it. Mm-hmm. So what was your intake on the mask situation?
Me?
Yes.
Well, okay. We did that with how do I see myself in my sex abuse group that I teach, Beauty Out of Ashes. And then within two or three months, I had them pass out another mask, and I had them write their name on it and pass it to somebody else in the class. And I said, how do you see Barbara Joy Hansen or Bobby Joy? And so their perception of me was completely different than my perception of myself. And we don't see ourselves the same as other people see us. And we put on that mask, and they see us as, you know, a completely different person than we really feel like we were. So they saw me as giving back. I was a self-starter. I was smart. I was a listener. One of my women in my group that went to AA three times a day and wasn't getting a whole lot of help, but that was the only thing she knew. She came into my group and she said, you're the love of my life and I'm your disciple. And I only knew her 8 months before she bled out and died, and she healed. And I am so blessed that I knew Holly. Other people said, you're sweet, you're gentle, you're honest, you're giving, you're a godsend. You never give up on me. You're intelligent. You're giving a breakthrough for me. So that was helpful for me to hear people talk about me completely differently than I saw myself. And it's a perception that I think we go out in the world, we put on this mask, and, oh, how are you today? Oh,
right.
I'm just fine. And you're really lying through your teeth if you're not healed, if you're not, you know, if you're not where you should be. And I did a lot of journaling, which is one of the reasons I wrote my book in 1 week and got it published 3 months later, was because I had journaled. I had written all the pain. I had pain journals. And I had them in my desk for 20-some, 30 years, and I could not look at those journals because they were so raw and filled with things that I had experienced and things that I wrote,
so,
and I didn't want anybody to know and see. And when I was ready to write my book, it was there. I opened up the journals. I had courage to go there, and it all came out.
Right. So, you know, as a facilitator for Beauty Out of Ashes, how can they get in touch with you again?
Okay,
if someone's listening out there. By the way, let me go ahead and put this number out again before you say that, okay? It's
all right.
Code 646-595-2118. And you can talk with Bobby Joy directly if you'd like to, but go ahead and give us that information again, please.
Okay, you can call and order my book at 508-473-1280, or you can email me. I'll send you some of my links, or I have an audio of me speaking at a Celebrate Recovery group at Bobby Joy Hansen, BobbyJoyHansen, at JUNO.com. I also have an ebook out with Rostrum Publishing Company, which is my publisher in Massachusetts. And you can go on my website and see all my shows, including my four-minute YouTube documentary movie of my life on www.listentothecry.org. You must see my four-minute documentary movie of my life, made in the Philippines, CBN Asia, The 700 Club. It's shocking. It's revealing. The producer kept asking me questions. I had an hour show, and they put it into a four-minute YouTube. 637 people called into the show. In the Philippines, they don't talk about anything like this in Asia. And they were shocked that that many people called that one night to connect to me.
That's just wonderful news, actually, you know, because somebody's got to start, you know, somebody's got to make it happen, and that's who you are, and, you know, this
and
is one of the points about NAFTA, too.
Every single interview I do, the producer asks different questions, and he kept asking and pulling more and more out of me, and I really didn't want to say what I did, so I'm not going to say it on the show tonight, but watch it and see it and be prepared for triggers. You know what triggers are, right? Triggers are hidden time bombs in the minefields of our emotional life. They're like snipers hiding in the shadows of our subconscious mind. With all of our efforts to heal, live wonderful, happy, fulfilled lives, or forgive those who harmed us, one snide comment, one disrespectful remark, a glance, a smell, like Tammy said, a rejection can ignite fuses of the person in front of us that turns into the parent who abandoned us, or the partner who cheated on us, or the person we lost to a tragedy, or the person that molested us. That's what triggers are.
Yes, that's well described as triggers. Absolutely. I will definitely back that up for sure, 100%. You know, and speaking about that, I have something that I want to ask you all about, and I hope that it doesn't trigger you, however, and I think a lot of us have been through this at this time of year, okay? And we've been talking about, you know, this at different situations, but, you know, we're going into the holidays, okay? We've got Thanksgiving coming up, Christmas and everything. And, you know, that time of year for a lot of people can be very triggering.
That's right.
You know, being depending on a lot of situations, and it almost doesn't really matter. They're almost all triggering when it comes down this year, you know, time of year for certain people. They might not want to be in the same house with the family. It could be somebody in the family. Something could happen, you know, so there's so much. How do y'all feel about that? You know, the holidays and being triggered by, if you were a sex abused child, okay, how are your thoughts to know that, you know, the situation might not be 100% good for you? In other words, you may have been invited back into a family due to the hardship of going through this over years. I'm not just talking about, I'm talking about 10, 15, 20 years maybe, you know?
Right.
What do y'all think about that?
Well, I'm going to answer that, and then I'll, if you don't mind, John, then we'll go to Barbara Joy, or me, and if John wants to answer it as well. This is Brian, right?
No, it's John.
Is it Brian talking, or is it John? Okay.
No,
okay,
John,
if you don't mind me asking, and then you know, Brian, and maybe we get some feedback from Barbara Joy. And I'm leaning forward on this one. You know, for anyone who is listening, and my opinion on this, well, to this panel, is that's a personal choice that everybody has to make. I've heard people say, well, you're putting yourself in that position. You know, you don't have to. There is no right or wrong answer here. I have done both. I have completely divorced my family for 5 years and didn't have anything to do with them because it was so toxic. And that was the right decision for me at the time. It really was.
Yeah, that's a perfect answer.
If people think that they have to be put in that, you know, if they cannot bear that and it's going to cause more anguish, don't go. You know, they'll just they'll just have to get over it. They'll just have to get over it. And that's what my family had to do. They just had to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Now yeah. I'm at a different point in my life. You know, one of my, well, my main abuser, which was not sexual abuse, is dead. But the other one who attempted the sexual abuse and, you know, and the mental abuse and the name calling and, you know, the,
uh-huh.
you know, my nickname was Dummy. You know, I couldn't stand to be around him. Now, you know, he's old, he's dying. My mother's old. You know, I made the decision a few years ago. My mother's never going to divorce him. He's there,
right.
you know. And I could not mm-hmm. be in the same room with him. Within 20 minutes, we'd be at each other's throat because I'm very direct, and
mm-hmm.
I just throw it out there. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'll throw it out there. My mom's, how can you do that? Why can't you let the past go? Why do you have to keep tormenting
uh-huh.
me?
Right.
I didn't care. You know,
well,
that's, you know, I didn't
that,
care. I
that,
just, you know, spit
right.
it out there.
Yeah.
But now, you know,
you
I can
you're,
go
you're
home for you know, yeah, I can go home for short periods of time, and, you know, I've chosen to have a relationship with my mother, you know, in the whatever time she's got left. I put up with him. He keeps his mouth shut now. I think it kind of came on both sides. He had to learn to keep his mouth shut, and so did I. So it works. But there is no wrong answer. If, in fact, it's going to be torture to you and you'll have to pay the price mentally for months on end, don't go. Don't get over it.
Right, right.
But if you choose to go, that's not wrong either. You just may have to realize what you're putting yourself through. That's my answer. Thank you, John.
Okay. Yeah, what about you, Brian?
No, you know, I feel that at this point or – in order to have family, you have to do what's right for you, and you have to do what makes you happy. And if that means surrounding yourself during Christmas or Thanksgiving with those people that make you feel good and make you feel happy without those triggers, then that's totally fine. And you do that, and you do what makes you happy. I think it took me a long time to get to that point, to be like, I need to do what makes me happy because it feels very selfish. But as long as you make those connections with the people that you care about and that care about you, I think it's important, but I think you just have to do what's right for you. You don't want to put yourself in situations where it's going
right.
to cause, you know, extra
right.
stress and drama. It takes time to get there, but I do think you have to do what makes you happy
yeah.
and what's important for you.
Right. That's great, Brian. Thank you so much for that. And the reason why, you know, I'm asking this and also, too, I just want to say that before, you know, we go to the next. Who's up, Tammy? Did you speak on this yet? You did, didn't
yeah.
you? Bobby Joy.
I said that, but I wanted to hear once
yes,
you're done,
Bobby Joy.
John and Brian, then I want to
I
see
just,
what Barbara Joy thinks about it.
Yes. I just want to say one thing about this, and I've already asked the question. We're going to go to Bobby Joy now. But, however, I do want to say that even if, you know, you do, you know, do not decide to go in a place where you don't want to be, is that mask is still going to be there for you, okay? Because it is an emotional time. I mean, everyone knows that the holidays are going to be, you know, hard for a lot of people. But NASCA is going to be there. In fact, we're going to have our show on Thanksgiving night. So I just want to throw that out there for anyone that's listening, is that we will be available on that particular night, okay? So also, Bobby Joy, how do you feel about that?
Well, I tend to get overwhelmed with a whole lot of people in my home, in our home. I don't know if that has anything to do with being a survivor, but I think it depends on who's in your home. And we have three adult sons. Two of them were very close. My husband and I are very close to, and our grandchildren, four grandchildren. But the one son that designed the cover and the illustrations in my book has distanced himself from us, so he no longer comes anymore, and that's fine. Once in a while, he'll pop up. But
uh-huh.
the thing that you when you mentioned Christmas, I did have a trigger, and that was
uh-huh.
my grandfather molesting me in the room with all the relatives with my little party dress on. And
no.
I was on a radio show one day, and the host said, well, at least, and it was Christmas time, and he said, well, at least you don't have to worry about being molested by Santa Claus. And it was like, oops, yes, I was, and it was my grandfather. So when I was little, Did I like to go sit down, you know, in a store? No, because he might do what my grandfather had done. So it's, you know, different for every one of us. I am facing knee surgery in about 3.5 weeks, knee replacement surgery. So I would appreciate your prayers. And that's at Christmas time, just before Christmas on the 13th of December.
Sure.
And my granddaughter wants to come here and have Christmas as it always was. And I'm a bit overwhelmed by that thought, because I'll be laid up just before that. And I told her, and she's like, well, I don't know how you can get outside and do all this yard work, and yet, you know, you're going to be in the hospital and not have us all come. It's always been that way. So I would love to be served. You know, why can't they bring Christmas to me? Which I might eventually say. But with COVID, I'm not sure one of our son's wives would come. So, you know, it is what it is. And we'll see. So.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I love the holidays, but I do get overwhelmed with a lot of people still.
Yeah, that's definitely understandable. You know, and I think, you know, like everyone has kind of really came onto the same field with us that, you know, I guess it's up to each individual with different situations, you know. Here's the thing, too, is that it can be very triggering, you know. So a lot of things depend on the people, and I think it's up to you to make that personal decision yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But, however, there are people there for you, though. If something should happen, or if you need to talk about it, you know, that's the best thing, is to open up and talk about it instead of, you know, being, you know, inside concealed about it. So you can let that off your chest, and you know, and that's what MASCA is all about, you know. And just like the platform, you know, that MASCA has to offer with everything here, is that we can always, you know, find somebody here that will touch your life in one way or another, you know. And that's what's so great about having the panel we have here tonight. You know, so, you know, going into this, we have about 20 minutes left, 22 minutes left or so. I know that you have put out a book, okay? And now on that book, you know, you got a lot of different topics and stuff in there about your own personal life, okay? So with that involved, do you experience a lot of things with PTSD involved in your book?
Yeah, I go into detail about everything I've experienced, and answers and awareness and things that I have, you know, found to cope. I write a chapter on how to keep kids safe. I have a chapter on statistics of child abuse, and a chapter on forgiveness, which is deep because you can never forget, and I don't think you're ever supposed to forget what happened to you, because like each of us have said, we use our past to move forward, to use the hope that we've gotten to give others. And forgiving doesn't erase our bitter past. A healed memory isn't a deleted one, but we can change the memory of our past into hope for the future. So
There's a lot of people out here that you know, have PTSD, and I know I do. I'm not sure about Brian, but I can tell you that.
Oh, I do.
When information, do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, the information coming from someone like you is vital. Okay. You know, you know, being the person that you are, I mean, you know, somebody has to find out, you know, about your story and why you have that and what you've done about it and different ways to come through it, you know, will it ever leave? Whoever knows, you know, but there are ways to deal with it, you know, through different types of therapies, you know. So on that PTSD, what would be your recommendation going through your experience on the therapy that you would recommend maybe or talk about?
Well, I didn't even know what PTSD was until I wrote my book, and I was getting doing a lot of self-searching, and wrote my entire journey in my book and healing things, answers and awareness. So I don't know if you know, but PTSD is traumatic amnesia. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, that is what it is. You've had so many traumas, many, many, many things have happened, not just one, but many things, that you've been wounded. And the more you've been wounded, the more you've been traumatized over and over with life-altering things that have happened. You're like a war vet, and it becomes like amnesia. You want to forget it. You can't forget it, so you shove it until all of a sudden it hits you in the face, like vomit. Or like a big volcano, it doesn't discriminate. Anybody can go through suffering through shock. The war vets, you know, the soldiers, they have panic attacks, they have denial, and they come home a completely different person from the war, from things they've seen. So have we. We've seen things, we've had things done to us, and we're traumatized by those. And the more we go through, the deeper it goes. So flashbacks can bring triggers of confusion, and it's like a shutter on a camera. You can either shut the camera off, and then it makes you feel helpless, or you're on alert all the time, or you're threatened and alone. And that was me. I isolated, and I write extensively in my book about all those things. But the memories will exist, and we need to learn what triggers our reaction and avoid what triggers us. So if we're manipulated or we're bullied or we're in a hostile environment, we just need to walk out if we can. When my husband would say things to me or be extremely angry, he is no longer there. And he's recovered a lot from his father's suicide. His father took his life when my husband was 27 and his father was 57. And he took that anger out on me, and he'd make fun of me having PTSD until many years later when he finally began to talk about it, like 30-some years later, when he allowed himself one day at a time to realize, oh, yeah, I think I have PTSD, too, which he absolutely did that. Yeah, so did his sister and his brother. And his sister's very mean to me when we go to her house, and I don't like to go there anymore. She's put me down. She won't read my book. She's like, oh, you chose this ministry you're in. Excuse me, I didn't say anything to her, but I didn't choose it. It was chosen for me. To lead others out.
That's right. Yeah. And I want to get Brian's input on this too. But before I do that, I want to tell everybody what we're talking about at the moment, and also give them the number out in case you want to call in and be on the panel. We have an open mic tonight. At the present moment, we're talking about PTSD. Okay, in different ways, to go through, the experiences that people suffer from. Through the trauma of it, and tonight we have a special guest also, by the way, and if you haven't heard, it's Bobby Joy Hansen, and she's from Milford, Massachusetts. She's an author, and she also facilitates Beauty Out of Ashes, its support group. Lots and lots of interviews over the years, very knowledgeable and very experienced. We also had Brian from Boston. Brian, we're talking about PTSD. What's your insights on it?
Well, I didn't realize I had it until I went to therapy. like Bobby Joy said, it's like amnesia. There'd be things that would I would even have like flashbacks from that seemed just like a movie. Something would trigger it, or like a movie that would cause like such anxiety and pain and emotions, and it took me a really long time to understand what it was. I think it takes a while to figure out how to deal with it, and I think it's definitely an ongoing process for me. After I right. recognized it and understood what it was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I think I never thought I was a depressed person. And then after going through therapy, mm-hmm. I realized, okay, there are some depression things. And I had to go on some medications for a little while to help myself and better mm-hmm. myself.
Mm-hmm.
And through
mm-hmm.
trial and
Let
error,
me ask
you
this,
find out what's best to do. Yeah.
How long ago
sure.
did he diagnose you with PTSD?
It was probably 6 years ago.
About 6 years ago. Okay. So
yeah.
you've lived through enough, you know, situations by now, or a lot of situations anyway, that you were probably set off, triggered, and became angry, huh?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Acting out in certain ways. It actually made a lot of sense. I don't think I ever realized how much the sexual abuse as a child affected me until I was an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to push it down so far that
mm-hmm.
as I got to
right.
an adult, I think, Bobby Joy, you might have said the same thing. It kind of exploded when I was like in my 30s. And I became like suicidal. I started abusing drugs that
uh-huh.
I never really ever
right.
used. I was
mm-hmm.
trying to escape
uh-huh.
from reality,
yes.
basically. And
right.
I think it took me a while to really figure out what was going on. Luckily, I was strong enough to realize I had a problem and wanted help. And
right.
But it all triggers from my, you know, abuse as a child.
Right.
And, you know, I think it takes a while to find your path to see what works for you. But there's definitely
mm-hmm.
There's triggers, I think, every day. And I think there's ways you
yeah.
have to go through them, try to work through them as well, too.
Right. And that's exactly why I want to get back to Bobby Joy, because we really didn't get to talk about, you know, the ways that you recommend what do you think about that? As
journaling.
Far as therapies, you know.
Journaling. If you haven't
mm-hmm.
started writing down those triggers or those memories or
mm-hmm.
the things that haunt
right.
you that
right.
are still frozen in your mind, that's
yeah.
why I started writing pain journals. And
mm-hmm.
each day you might have, you know, something happen that makes you depressed or anxious or happy
mm-hmm.
or, you know, peaceful
right.
or whatever. Write and date it, right? You know, I had so many journals, and people started giving me journals because I am a writer, and I always knew I could write
mm-hmm.
since I was little. But writing
yeah.
down those things really helps you
mm-hmm.
Identify what happened. And when I was writing
right.
my book, my editor
mm-hmm.
took what I had already written, and she did a rewrite,
mm-hmm.
but she said, I never want my voice to come ahead of yours. I want your story told in your words
right.
the way you would tell
mm-hmm.
it. And so I started out telling about my journey out of the ashes since I was little and my coming out. I told my father first, thinking because he was a clergy and they're both in heaven, that he would understand me. But they weren't taught in seminary back then and how to help a survivor, and he cried for me. He wept for me,
mm-hmm.
but then he also told me, oh, just put the past in the past, and which to me was remain silent, and I'd already been told this. So I remained numb and in denial for another 3 years until my grandfather died at 101, and I couldn't go to the funeral, and I didn't want to go, and I was afraid my mother would ask. But like Brian has said, the shedding and the coming out
mm-hmm.
comes in bits and pieces. And
yes.
someone counseled me, an elderly woman that was teaching a trauma group, gave me a wonderful piece of advice. She said, don't
mm-hmm.
open the door until God opens it up. He'll open it. In other words, that took the pressure off of me and feeling like I had to tell
mm-hmm.
everything all at once. And you just can't do that. And,
right.
you know, each year, each day, each moment of the day, something new happens. I try
right.
to wake up with positivity and realize, okay, who can I help today? Or maybe just a
uh-huh.
smile. Maybe somebody
exactly.
at the grocery store
yeah.
might need me to pay for something for them, or, you know, I've sold books to complete strangers in line at the grocery store as I give my card out, and I have books in the car. So, you know, each person's journey is different, and each memory is different. But we need to embrace embrace the things that have happened to us and write them down.
Right. I agree with that 100%. Before Tammy comes on, I want her, Tammy's input on this too, because I'm sure she wants to, she has a lot to say about this. But that is the first thing that I recommend when somebody calls me, which happens a lot, is that that's exactly what I want them to do. And they and it changes their life around, you know. So, you know, think about it. Maybe you have to, because here's the other thing. They're asking me, what, you just want me to do a diary? I said, well, it's not necessarily a diary. What it is, though, is that you could be remembering one thing one day, and then you wrote it down before, but it's a different day. But now you're thinking something different on that same subject.
Absolutely.
I don't care. Write it down.
Absolutely.
You know, this is,
I think that's,
you know,
so
science?
Important. Yeah, absolutely. Journaling, I think you, it's absolutely so important. I didn't find that out until about 7 years ago. It's so important.
Yes, yes.
Right. Let me give you my thoughts. Let me. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, no. I just said it's incredibly, incredibly helpful. Incredibly helpful.
Okay. Let me give you my thoughts on triggering. I think journals is a good idea. Not everybody may not have the be ready to journal. If you are, that's fine. If not, that's fine. Hopefully they can get to that point. But the one thing that I would tell people is to understand what triggers are. You know, they are a bomb that explode, but you can look at it a little bit of a different way as well. Our body, our minds can only deal with so much at one time. And that's why, you know, people actually question our validity on survivors. Well, you know, you forgot about it. You put it back. You just remembered it. You know, of course we did. You know, and then they question whether or not we're being honest. But here's the thing, is our minds can only deal with so much at one time. You know, I remember when I was going through something, I remember turning to stone. And Bill and I had talked about that, you know, because he said that he got that when he was going through it. He turned to stone. Your body just shuts off. And you bury it in the back of your head. And even though it's painful going through it, when your body, like I think Barbara Joy said, that, you know, God will open the door when the time is right. And if you can understand that you have to get through the triggers, that your mind opening up and remembering the triggers, as painful as they are, is a healing process. Because your body and your mind and your heart and God and, you know, whatever you believe with your core is saying, it's time to deal with this. I pushed it away because you needed protection, mind, body, and soul. But now it's time to deal with it and get through it and understand it. It sounds crazy and it's painful. I've been through some triggers that have put me in a fetal position crying for weeks, but I got through them. And I had to learn that. I didn't just come into this knowing that. I had to learn that. And it worked. It is your mind and body telling you it's time to get through it. That's my thought.
It is. It's a learning experience. I think we're always going to be learning. You know, there's never going to be, to me, in my opinion, a day that we're going to say, hey, this is exactly what it is. You know, because anything could set somebody off in different ways, different times of the year. Whoever knows. But in my opinion, like all of us have talked about, you know, writing things down initially, too, is the biggest step that I could recommend, and we've all recommended to anyone listening out there. Is to write down what you're feeling, you know, and get that out, and don't leave it inside. And the other thing, too, is that, listen, you're not alone. You're not alone. You know, we have very experienced people here, and if you ever want to even just call and listen to the show, we only have 5 minutes left, but it's 646-595-2118. You can always, give your opinion, and you can remain anonymous. But, you know, we have some pretty serious topics here that we discuss, and mainly, you know, it's been a lot about PTSD lately, you know, but, you know, going on about, you know, with trauma is that how important is it for you to remain healthy when you're, you know, experiencing this kind of stuff?
We need to take care of ourselves. Our mental health should be a priority, but usually with women, we take care of others first before we take care of ourselves. And mm-hmm. myself being a mother and having skateboard sons and a pool in our backyard and towels, wet towels everywhere, and meals, I was constantly taking care of. And then when the last son left the house, the triggers set in, the memories came and flooded down. And that's when I started writing and journaling and getting some of the stuff written out and realizing I need to take care of me. So now number one is God and then me. I take care of myself by going to bed at a certain time, closing the light off, no news at night, because I can't take trauma. And most of the news on television now is awful. Bombings or shootings or, you know, especially in the Boston area, we've had a lot of murders in Dorchester and, you know, a lot of horrible things, and I can't watch it. I don't think any survivor should watch the news at night and then go to bed. But for like Tammy said, she cried for quite a while. So did I. I wept for probably a good year and a half to 2 years grieving, and I didn't know why I was grieving. I was crying and crying. Mm-hmm. It was the loss of my youngest son, and I didn't recognize it until that time passed, and then I realized that's why I'm crying. It's because I miss him. I love him. He's about 25 minutes away from me with his wife, and I pray someday he'll come back to me. But more than that, I pray that he'll come back to God, because he was raised in the same home the other two were. And we had a faith-based home. So I don't grieve anymore. I let it go. If he responds, that's good. If not, that's okay.
Yeah. I know myself, too, and I think everybody here has gone through a lot of that. And I've even cried on interviews before. I mean, you know, especially in the beginning years ago. And even giving interviews, I've also cried, you know, with survivors, which I'm going to tell you something right now. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
At all. You know, if you can share that with somebody else, and if that's what it's going to take for you, then you do it, you know, and don't hold that in, you know, and this is what we're all about here, you know. So, listen, we have about 2.5 minutes left, okay? I do want to give a recap real quick what happened tonight and give everybody just a little bit to say something before we end the show. I do want to thank everybody that's been here tonight. We had a wonderful show. We really did. We had a special guest. It was Barbara Joy Hansen. She goes by Bobby Joy. She was from Massachusetts in Milford, and she has a lot of interesting features that she does. I mean, her book. And she also has Beauty Out of Ashes. And I do want to let her give you her information right now, if you would, on how they can get in touch with you.
They can call me at 508-473-1280. Go on my website, listentothecry.org. It also has my email on there. And I just want to say that when we stand up for ourselves, we stand up for another person. And that's the only way to help. Because domestic violence and sexual assault are human issues, and our silence only perpetrates it.
Right.
We must step up and step out so that the generational curses are broken.
Well, Bobby Joy, I just want to tell you, it has been a true joy tonight. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
It's been a wonderful show. And we can't thank you enough, you know, for all of the valuable information that you came with tonight, because it was just unbelievable. It was a great show. And we also have Brian on tonight from Boston. So you want to give us, one gem there, Brian?
Hey, no, I'm so happy. Thank you so much, especially Bobby Joy, for inviting me to join this conversation. This was a last-minute thing for me. And, you know, sometimes people are put in your path for a reason. So I really truly believe that. So thank you for having me. I'm on Twitter. That's how I found Bobby Joy. I'm a survivor of child sexual abuse, and I'm an advocate for survivors, and I'm so happy that you guys have me here today. So thank you, John, Tammy, and Bobby Joy.
Thank you.
You can reach me on Twitter at Brian Moore Ward. Thank you.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
All right,
hi, Tammy.
John. Good. We are out of time, so I'm just going to say excellent job.
Yes.
Nice to meet you, Brian. Great, great show, John. And thank you, Barbara Joy. That's all.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you all, everybody. And listen, if we don't ever get together again, I think it's been just a wonderful show tonight. And that's why I like when people like this get together. We really did great tonight. Really did. Okay? Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
And listen, I want everybody to have happy holidays, too. I know the show is and the show's supposed to end. The music is coming up. Until it does, is there anybody who wants
to
have one more thought? There it goes.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. I hit the button.
Yeah, it does it on its own. Yeah. All right.
No, it doesn't.
You
have to hit the button. Okay, cool beans.
Okay.
All right. Good night, y'all.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye. All right.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will